This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
We're very fortunate. We haven't had this guest in the studio for quite a long time. And a little bit of history. Many, many years ago, under the Bracks government, when legislation was passed, the same-sex relationships bill, this was an incredible moment in our community, and I remember the hard work that went into that in terms of, you know, lobbying all sides of politics and particularly the opposition at the time, the state opposition, to pass this legislation. Susan Davies, the independent MP, was crucial in this. Robert Clark, a current member of the Shadow Cabinet, the only Liberal in the lower house to vote against the legislation. I remember that, Robert, don't worry. But what stuck in my mind was the night that this legislation passed through the Legislative Council on the, I don't know what you call it, Tass, the veranda?
The rear patio.
The patio, the lanai at Parliament House, having a glass of champagne with our next guest, and we were both teary. Richard Wynne, the member for Richmond.
Former Lord Mayor of Melbourne.
Former Lord Mayor of Melbourne. I remember, Dick, you gave me a hug and you said, "Isn't this something great?" And you had tears in your eyes. This was the result of a lot of work. And I'll never forget that night. And Dick's remembering it now.
He's getting emotional.
This was a really, really defining moment in our community and a defining moment in how government's engaged our community. Because equal means equal. So it's been a long time, Dick, but thank you. I won't forget that. I won't forget the hard work you did and all the hard work all your colleagues did and our community did. It was an awesome, awesome evening. And it set the scene for all the change that has actually come since. And no, I'm not the grumpiest man on Joy. Dick, welcome.
Thanks, Macca. It's that's a beautiful welcome, and I am a little bit emotional. Tass, thank you for having me on again, and just remembering back to, you know, that night was an incredible night where we came together both as a parliament, but also as a community to say that equality is not negotiable.
Mm.
Equality is not negotiable, and we amended so many acts.
42
acts of parliament that that were prejudicial to people living in same-sex relationships.
Yeah.
And that was extraordinary. I remember the night so well. I was actually, I drove home that night actually quite lightheaded. I was sort of...
It wasn't the Terps, was it?
No, it wasn't the... Well, we only had half a glass of champagne. It was late at night too, as you'll remember.
I do.
And I was driving home and I just thought, my God, I mean, we have done something incredibly profound here, and how great it is to be an elected official, a member of parliament and a member of a great government. So thank you for reminding me of it. I don't forget it. And, you know, we maintain, I think, those memories incredibly fondly.
And they are. And it's important to remember, that was a minority government.
Correct.
Right?
Mm, yeah.
So it was Susan Davies, Russell Savage and...
It was Craig Ingram.
Craig Ingram.
I saw him yesterday at the footy.
Yes. Yeah.
But I saw him at the footy last
night. Yeah, no, Craig's. Yep.
But Susan Davies was crucial in this.
Yes, she was.
In that was the vote that got it over the line initially.
That's right.
Susan is now up in Gippsland running, she's actually on a farm, but she's actually running a bit of a community energy group
And yes, I believe so.
Yeah, and Tass and I are going to go up and see her one day. She invited us up to come and have a look. But I just wanted to say that that legislation started the ball rolling for equality for our community, and it hasn't stopped.
No, there's still a long way to go.
There's still a long way to go.
Let's not be all rosy coloured.
But I just wanted to give people a bit of background. Dick Wynne has been a supporter of our community for many, many, many years, and it's made a difference.
We have Dick Wynne, the member for Richmond, the minister for planning, former Lord Mayor.
Yeah.
And Mac, Dick, you've been around forever. I don't know what else to say, really.
Well, yes, it's been a...
I mean, there are bits of Melbourne that you are just rusted, a rusted part of, really, aren't you?
Hotham Hill.
Yeah, no, the inner city's my, you know, that's my place. And I love it. You've had the Lord Mayor on, you know, just before me. And I thought it was an interesting conversation that you were having, Tass, about the difference between Sydney and Melbourne and both the quality of the built environment in Melbourne, but also that we are a living city. I mean, I remember when... You know, it sounds a long way back now, but, you know, when I was down at the town hall in 1912. they were my salad years.
I was about to say the 1970s, but really would have got that wrong.
1990-91 was my mayoral year when, we had a kind of modest ambition of going, gee, you know, wouldn't it be good if we could get, you know, a couple of thousand people to actually come and live in the city?
Yeah.
I mean, there was nobody.
No.
Well, nobody lived in the city.
There was only Peter Jansen.
There was Peter Jansen who lived at the top of the Windsor.
Yes.
With... I don't know if they were wolfhounds or wolves or whatever they were, but he used to walk them in.
His pets. That's right.
He lived in the top of the Windsor. And I think the survey that the council undertook of who actually lived here, there were about, I think, maybe 300 people.
Yeah.
You know, and they lived in warehouses and, you know, you were one of those people. Well, there you are. But, you know, there was nobody here. So, and if you wanted to buy milk at night or...
You had to drive out to the suburbs.
You had to go to Carlton.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you were lucky.
To the outer suburbs.
Yeah. And if you look at it now and you think, my God, I mean, how our city has changed over these 30 years. But it's also about the quality of the city. And, Tess, you were talking about the fact that there was no heart really in the centre of Sydney. I was up in Sydney only a few weeks ago, and I agree with you. I think that we are really blessed by our forefathers who outlined who laid out our city and the HODL grid, our laneways, the arcades,
everything.
And if you walk around the city now, in Swanston Street, you know, I close Swanston Street to traffic, and if you walk around there at night now, you know, from basically the State Library down, it's wild. I mean, it's fantastic.
It's a vibrant
place. It's really, really vibrant.
I agree.
And, you know, let's not go to Peter. Let's not go to Peter Dutton, and it's not safe to eat in Victoria. But you know, Melbourne, heavens above.
I'm speechless about that whole conversation. Yeah. By the way, I can't believe.
Sorry, I shouldn't have opened it.
I know you shouldn't have, but I just want to just close it down for a second. I'm angry that there is no leadership in this nation coming from our federal government around racial issues. Mm. It is absolutely appalling that what they're in fact doing is stoking racism. They're stoking division, and I'm really angry about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll have an election, obviously not this year now, one assumes a federal election, but it looks like it'll go into next year. But, gee, you'd hope that the standard of debate and discourse rises.
Mm. It's not just dogs that hear the dog whistles, you know. Mm.
Okay, then we want to talk about some issues.
No, sorry, one final thing. Sydney, the perfect city to film the next series of the Walking Dead. They don't need to set the sets up or anything. They can just film it in Sydney. There you go. That'll get a response.
Let's move on. We could talk
nothing parochial about this program.
No.
And we will come back to some of the planning issues, because we are very interested in that. But one of the things that we want to talk about later on in this show is the medically supervised injecting facility.
Yes.
We've got Dr. Nicho Clark coming in, and we'll have an in-depth look at that issue.
That's great.
I don't want to talk about that with you this morning, but what I'd like for you to explore with us is the opposition parties, the Liberal parties, position on the supervised injecting facility. They've made it very clear, and even on our very show, that they will shut it down. What's driving that? What's that about, Dick?
Well, I think, Tassie, incredibly disappointing. So I've actually been campaigning for a medically supervised injecting facility since 1999 when I was elected. My first brochure, we actually dug one out, and it's up on my website, which a younger and a fuller head of hair. I was
Dick. I was around then. Neither of us had hair then. Neither of us had hair. Let's be honest about it.
I invite your listeners to go to my to go to my website, and you'll see a rather attractive picture of myself then.
But Dick, I recall that policy very well because I was around at the time when I was working on. The government was going to build 5.
Correct.
In each of the hotspots in Melbourne. Because at the time we had a heroin epidemic.
Springvale, Richmond, Footscray, Dandenong.
St Kilda.
Correct.
It was actually, it was Dandenong. Yep.
And it passed the lower house and failed for want of support in the upper house of the parliament. And that was, really very, very, very disappointing.
Interesting, made even more interesting, given that there was a clear understanding that the previous government, the Liberal government, had in fact provided a handshake, a nod and a wink, and enabled a NGO to actually build a injecting facility in the middle of the CBD.
You're referring to the site behind the back of the Collins Street Baptist Church?
Wesley Church.
Wesley Church. Yeah, I'm not so sure about that, actually, whether that was in fact the case. But really, moving forward, it has been a long struggle, a very long struggle. I mean, and I have to acknowledge the Yarra Drugs and Health Forum, who've been at this for a very, very long time and have been tremendous advocates. And I think it was a pretty unique confluence of events, but it was essentially the extraordinary number of deaths that we, and lonely deaths of
dirty deaths that didn't need to happen.
Correct. In North Richmond, who were clustered around the Victoria Street precinct in North Richmond. And last financial year, 35 people died. 35 people needlessly died last year. And I think from the point of view of government, it's just not acceptable. I mean, a good and compassionate government
saves lives.
Yes, cannot sit by idly and say, well, that's all okay. No, it's not okay. And so I was really, proud that the Premier let's be clear that the Premier did not support this for quite a long time, but I think he saw over time, and obviously I was advocating very strongly with him, that this was unacceptable. You cannot have 35 people dying literally in a suburb and not do something about that, and he was essentially persuaded by that argument, firstly.
And the evidence. That this actually can save lives.
And it does save lives, and you'll hear more from Dr. Nicho Clark about that.
So explain to us, why is Matthew Guy and his team going to shut this down?
Well,
maybe it's a question for Matthew Guy.
Maybe it's a question for Matthew Guy. But
one for Tim Smith, but his phone's not in coverage.
But I think the argument that they put was, why would you put a safe supervised injecting facility next door to a school? Can I just say this? The people were shooting up in the car park of the school, shooting up in the car park of the school, shooting up in the car park of the public housing estate directly behind the school. It's not as if people who were using drugs were not already in that community, and that the school was very well aware of this. The school have been absolutely sensational and have been huge supporters of the supervised injecting facility. And I give I give the school every ounce of credit for what they have done, because they understood that not only was it important that we clean up the area, but that there is a safe place for people to, in fact, inject. It's now been going for about a month.
Yep.
And Nico, will talk further about his experiences there. But certainly when I've spoken, and I've been in obviously very close contact with him over since it's opened, he said on at least probably five occasions, there were people there who had overdosed, who, if there had not been a medical intervention, they would have died.
He said that at the end of the first week of operation. Mm. So I suspect there's been a whole lot more lives that have been saved since then. But you still haven't answered the question: why is the opposition so hell bent on shutting this down? What's driving that?
I think it fits into their law and order rhetoric. That they don't see that this is actually not a law and order issue.
It's a health issue.
Public health issue.
It's a public health issue. It's a public amenity issue. In all of my conversations with my community since it's open, people are saying to me there has been a demonstrable change, particularly for residents living around the North Richmond area. And we will see, obviously, over time, because it will be independently assessed, what the effect that this was has had in relation to ambulance call-outs, for instance. This is an important part of our fuller understanding. Because, you know, there was enormous costs involved in ambulance call-outs and the strain that's put on the hospital system, the casualty wards, and also VicPol as well. I mean, we have to understand that the supervised injecting facility is supported by all of the emergency services and indeed Victoria Police.
So hold that thought. We will come back to that. So I want to explore the community safety issue a bit more.
And I just want to say, on this show, Ken Lay, the chair of Ambulance Victoria, ex-commissioner of Victoria Police, before this was established, said there was no evidence that he could see that said it shouldn't be. And Steve McGee of the Ambulance Employees Union also said that the paramedics support this. They're sick and tired of trying to save people's lives who've overdosed in the gutter.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Before we continue the conversation, Macca, we have a comment from one of our listeners. Would you like to read that out?
The injecting room is about courage and evidence-based. Thank you, Dick.
There you go.
That's very nice. Thank you very much.
There you go. Somebody's acknowledging your role in making this happen. Dick, what I'd like to explore a bit further is this idea that supervised injecting facilities can be a honeypot for drug dealers.
Yes.
So drug dealers would presumably know that there would be users turning up to inject.
Yep.
And they could probably do a very quick deal and drum up some business. Mm. Now, that, of course, creates all sorts of issues around the amenity and safety and perceptions and so forth. Is that true? Is that what we're experiencing?
The experience of King's Cross, which has now been going for 20 years. Is that there has been no so-called honeypot effect at all. And the experience thus far, anecdotally in North Richmond, in the month or so that we've had it, has been operating, is that there has been no suggestion of that at all. In fact, you know, I spend quite a bit of time down in that part of the world, not surprisingly.
Well, it's in the middle of your electorate, isn't it?
Indeed, it is, in the middle of my electorate. Talking to many people on the public housing estate, it's very quiet. Very quiet indeed.
It's good.
It's good. Really good.
Let's move on to Fed Square because...
We've already signalled it as a topic.
I remain unconvinced about the Apple Store, Dick.
Okay.
Convince me.
Okay. Macca, I was down in Federation Square a week ago, and I have to say Federation Square is at a tipping point.
Yeah.
There are a lot of shops that are closed. And admittedly, it was early in the week. It was a Monday afternoon and pretty chilly. But gee, it was pretty empty.
Okay.
So there's a lot of work to be done to really reinvent Federation Square, I think. People are very passionate about Federation Square, and I understand that as a place for public assembly and, you know, with the big screens and so forth and concerts and things that go on there. I mean, it is a fantastic space. But we should not forget that there was much controversy when Federation Square was first designed and, in fact, built. The reason why I support it is because I was persuaded by the original architect of Federation Square, Don Bates, who said that the building was always... the square was always designed to have a major retail space in the square. And that was from its original design, because it needed to financially sustain itself. You can't just have a square that, you know, doesn't have activity and life in it.
I've heard that argument before, and in fact, the view was that Transport Bar was going to provide that solution.
And to some extent, it has.
Yeah.
And there are a number of commercial uses in the square, so that in my decision making around this, there were some not negotiables. The Koori Heritage Trust had to be supported, absolutely supported, and they had to agree to it. As far as I was concerned, it was not negotiable, and in fact, they are very happy with the change to their siting, and they will move to the SBS building, and that's a much better site for them. And really, when you did talk to the state architect and you talked to the original architect of Federation Square, you go, okay, there is a long history to this that actually supports the notion of a commercial building being in the space. Now, I understand people have got views about the Apple Store and Apple more generally, and, you know, multinationals and so forth. Okay, people can have that view, but what was, I think, of importance to me from a planning perspective was actually ensuring that the building was a complementary asset to Federation Square. And I have to say that the first iterations of it were, I'm trying to be polite here, challenging, but... The design that's now been worked through, and can I say, with the City of Melbourne, who've done tremendous amount of work with us, is a far, far superior building to the original design that we saw.
So my reading of this design is that what it will in fact do is remove what is a block, a mass, that divides the river, the parkland,
correct,
with Fed Square. Open that up so that you have this sort of amazing open vista across all of that that brings together those different elements.
Correct.
Yep.
So it's a lightweight...
I'm excited by that.
I think that's a really important point, because your access to the river is now currently blocked. So Birrarung Ma down to the river, you're going to have this beautiful...
What a waste.
A beautiful vista down.
What a waste.
Yeah, beautiful vista down to the river. And, you know, really quite a lightweight... and quite transparent and quite elegant building will be there. I know, you know, it will continue to have, you know, community discussion, community debate about it, but I think what's been really pleasing is that people have been prepared to listen to the concerns that people have had about the design of the building, and we have a far superior building now.
Will it be leasehold?
Yes. I can't recall exactly the length of the lease. I'll get it wrong. They don't own it. It's a lease.
But they'll build and they'll lease back.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. I'll have another think about it. We'll talk about it a bit more offline.
Okay.
The Pride Centre.
Fitzroy Street.
Fitzroy Street, where...
amazing. You want to talk about a design of a building. Boy,
yeah, that's pretty exciting.
That is an amazing building.
But tell us about the planning process, Dave.
Yeah, there's been a lot of consultation in the city of Port Phillip. Some of it encouraging, some of it not. But at the end of the day, you know, the planning process has to run its course. Mm. The question I'm going to ask you, Dick, are you going to call it in?
That's a matter... Thanks, Macca.
If I was the minister, I would.
Yeah, of course you would.
Yeah.
Well, and...
Okay, so what does that mean? What does calling it in mean?
Take it from the council's decision-making.
Yeah.
And becomes a decision for myself. Look, I think this is an amazing opportunity for us, again, to celebrate... to celebrate...
Our community.
The community. I mean, the history of struggle.
Yeah.
Of you know, people who have struggled for their whole lives to get equality and decency. And that's what the Pride Centre in part is about. I mean, it's going to have a whole range of LGBTI support services that are going to be based at the centre, and I think that's wonderful.
Including this studio.
Including this station.
Yes, that's right. The station's going down there, which will be just, you know, I mean, it just brings everything together, and I think that's fantastic. Obviously, I continue to talk to the city of Port Phillip about it, and we'll see where this lands, Macca, but there is still some contest and argument down there about that, and I'm aware of that.
Well, okay. Dick, I mean, if I can just speak as a resident, as a member of the community, we just want it.
Yeah, of course you do.
Do what you have to do to just sign it off and get it going. We want to see a hole in the ground soon.
Yeah, I get it.
What a great...
I'm furious with Martin Foley, though. Should have been on the north side.
Yes.
Well, north side couldn't put in a proposal that was actually competitive.
No, I don't know about that.
Mm.
Well, hello.
Like, where is the centre of community? Don't tell me it's down your...
Actually, why don't we put it at 104 Exhibition Street?
Stop.
No. I think it would make, you know, a fitting, not monument, but a home for our community, you know... And
at 104 Exhibition, you are a shocker. Yeah. You are a shocker.
Look, if you're listening, Michael Craigie, you can keep one floor, we'll have the rest, okay? I think it would be a fitting place for our community to have a home, and it cements...
You're going to have a wonderful home in Fitzroy Street, St Kilda.
So if it was Minister Macca...
And good on you, Martin Foley.
Yeah.
We've just had a...
Minister Macca would call it in.
We've had a very funny comment from Simo. Simo says that the city really is the Paris end of East St Kilda. And then they go on to say that my guess is that Fed Square will become satirically known as Apple Square.
Oh.
Comment, Dick?
No. It will always be part of our lexicon that it is Federation Square.
Well, of course, we have the second biggest organ at the Melbourne Town Hall. We have the next biggest organ at St Paul's.
Far be it for me to contradict.
Come on, let's not get into organ jokes.
Our Lord Mayor, who I listened to on the way in and met, and working beautifully with her. I think the St Paul's one is both older and I think larger.
Bigger, yeah. Well, you'd expect that. It's a Catholic church.
Yeah, they're a bunch of dicks. Okay.
No, St Paul's. Anglican. St Paul's is not St Pat's.
Oh, right.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, wrong franchise. Hungry Jack's Macca's.
Hey, Dick, thank you for coming into the studio. It's always good to have you here.
thank you for having
you
me.
Can't wait
There's
to get
so
out.
Much more we can talk about, and time's just run out.
We could go all day.
We could actually. Maybe we should do that.
Yeah,
we're I'll come back another time.
Yeah, come in for a whole 2 hours.
I want to talk about, and I
do the whole 2 hours.
Why not?
You can co-host.
You up for that?
You can co-host.
Oh, that'd be exciting.
Yeah, and we'll get some libs in and you can grill them.
Thank you for my little
two.
Cups.
You get two.
I get two.
You get two.
This is getting better by the minute.
Yeah.
All right.
Hi, this is John Borghetti, the CEO of Virgin Australia. Just like Joy 94.9, we are flying high and proud.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.